cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts. This is Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser.
And I'm Bloomberg Quick Take's Tim Stenovek. We're here every day bringing you the latest news from the world of business and finance.
Plus technology, politics, economics, all harnessing the power of Business Week reporters and editors.
Not to mention our 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries.
You can download Bloomberg Business Week on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
You can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on Bloomberg Radio.
Or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Well, Friday's strong jobs report showed us once again the strength of the U.S. labor market, and yet recent gains in U.S. payrolls, including a stronger than expected June advance, probably exaggerate current employment growth. This is not, according to somebody much smarter than me, and we're talking about Goldman Sachs chief economist Jan Hatzius. As he put out a note today. Tim, what's interesting is he pointed to the Labor Department's separate survey of households, which showed a 315,000 drop in June employment, and that source of data showed employment has fallen by about 116,000 on average over the past 3 months. He also pointed to declines in job vacancies and quits, higher jobless claims, weaker employment indexes and industry surveys, as well as scattered reports from companies about hiring freezes and slowdowns. And I think about Rivian cutting some workers today.
Yeah, that story from Ed Ludlow just crossing a little bit ago. That's why we like to turn to people who are in the industry to get a really good idea of what they're seeing on their platforms. We go to Julia Pollack, chief economist at ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter has job seekers and employers who are looking for jobs. So ZipRecruiter and Julia have a great idea about what's actually happening out there in the economy. Julia, good to have you back with us. How would you characterize the job market right now?
So I think we have an interesting situation where, despite so much taking place in the last 4 months, according to the establishment survey anyway, amazingly, job gains have been quite resilient and steady. That said, of course, there are some caveats. There are the economic data are mixed, and it's not 100% clear what's going on. But it is clear that we're not in a deep recession anyway. If this is a recession, this is the strangest recession we've ever seen, where there are actually pretty solid job gains taking place across the economy. And where you have some industries pulling back a little bit, the most interest rate sensitive industries, but you also have a lot of industries still reopening, still recovering, and still growing.
What are you seeing at ZipRecruiter?
So we're seeing a little bit of softness in job postings. They've come down from their fall 2021 peak. We're also seeing that employers don't quite feel that they need to bend themselves into pretzels and contort themselves and do gymnastics to get candidates to sign on the dotted line.
Interesting.
So the share of postings offering signing bonuses, for example, has fallen in half since 2021. And that's interesting because we saw the biggest increase in signing bonuses ever and an expansion in their use across industries, with employers feeling that they needed to pull out all kinds of gimmicks and do whatever it took to get candidates. And now they seem to be getting people without resorting to those tactics.
I think that's a fascinating
that's
part of this.
That's a big stat,
because,
I feel like.
You know, for so much of the last year, Julia, we've heard about, you know, employees holding the cards or potential employees, workers holding the cards. And you know, it's played out in so many interesting ways, right? Like a hybrid work environment or remote only jobs, just companies coming out and essentially begging people to take these positions. I wonder what you're seeing on the job seeker side of things. And what I love about talking to you is you not only have insight into what employers are looking for when it comes to their postings, but also what type of jobs people are looking for and they're taking. So what are you seeing on that other side of the marketplace?
So we're seeing those numbers hold pretty steady. And we're seeing job seekers continue to be pretty confident and find success in their job searches. So you know, most job seekers have a couple of offers in their pockets that they can choose between. They don't feel financial pressure yet to take the very first offer. But for the first time in June, our future expectations index took a nosedive. So job seekers are still doing pretty well right now, but they are very worried about the future.
See, and this plays into, you know, we talked with our Michael McKee earlier, who follows the international economy and policy, and said what's really going to be key in addition to the CPI print and the inflation print this week is the University of Michigan report on Friday and consumer expectations. And just the sentiment of how people are feeling about the outlook, and that plays into what you are seeing, that it's interesting to see that maybe people aren't as optimistic, right? Or their
sentiment.
Sentiment.
That is what is important.
Like, that to me seems pretty significant. So do you feel like then we've rolled over or are rolling over, Julia, when it comes to kind of peak employment?
No, I think we're likely to get peak inflation in June. And I think we're going to be in a situation where we have a period of you know, slower growth, but the Fed may manage to bring inflation down without causing major labor market pain. Right now, it looks like they may manage to sort of, you know, hit this straight down the fairway, and hopefully we'll see a slowdown in those job gains, but not a dramatic slowdown. So, you know, we have to keep these numbers in context. Basically, the private sector is fully recovered now. There are more people, as of this last jobs report, employed in the private sector than there were before COVID, which means that the jobs hole is basically closed. And so we should see job gains go back to a more normal level. So 372,000 jobs added, that's more than twice the 2019 monthly average of 164,000. So these are still huge numbers, and there's quite a lot of room for the labor market to sort of, you know, edge back down to normal.
Yeah, we go back, Carol, to what we were talking about last week. With gains like we've seen every single month when it comes to payrolls, it's difficult to even imagine that we're in a recession right now.
Right, exactly. Like, how long does it take to work down kind of these types of gains? You can't just flip a switch and all of a sudden we're not seeing this kind of job creation. Julia, some interesting insight. Really appreciate it. Julia Pollack, she's chief economist at ZipRecruiter, joining us on the phone in Santa Monica, California.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do. The people in the spotlight, athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
So you're listening to Bloomberg Business Week, Carol Masser, along with Tim Stenovic.
It's okay. We've only known each other for 2 years. It's okay.
Oh, my God. Help me.
This is why I haven't been invited over for Friday pizza night at the Masser household.
Still working on who are you?
Exactly.
I adore. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
On the Bloomberg, I'm going to switch gears.
I get my name wrong just to save you often. So
I get my own name wrong. I get the company I work for after how many years. All right. On the Bloomberg terminal, we talked about this story. Jared Dillian, Bloomberg opinion columnist. He writes that Americans are talking themselves into a recession. We're already seeing that in the housing market, Tim. U.S. home sale cancellations jumping in June, roughly 60,000 deals falling through. That's about 15% of homes that entered into a contract, according to Redfin. So we're wondering what the consumer's up to.
Yeah, what is the consumer up to, especially ahead of Prime Day, and what's actually going on, you know, with marketplace sellers when it comes to Prime Day? For that, we turn to Tom McGee, the president and CEO of ICSC. Tom joins us on the phone from Los Angeles. Tom, good to have you with us. You should note that ICSC promotes, as you write on the website, and elevates the marketplaces and spaces where people shop, dine, work, and play. So think brick and mortar here. Give us an idea, Tom, of what you're thinking and what you're seeing right now as we look across the economic landscape and try to get an understanding for the shifting way that people are spending money.
Well, good afternoon, and thanks for having me on. Hi, Tim. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
Good to be with you again. Look, I think the consumer has been exceptionally resilient. Over the course of obviously the last couple of months where inflation concerns have been, you know, significant and heightened. You know, I do think that we'll continue to see strong retail sales over the next, few months. You still have a high level of personal savings and the job market is strong. But, you know, I think if inflation continues to be, front and center and continues to be at the levels that it is today, of course, at some point it's going to have a negative impact upon consumer spending. Right now, you know, you still have those strong underlying, considerations of personal savings and jobs, and that's going to drive, continue to drive the spend. And that both in retail, but also in experiences. I mean, it is the summertime.
Yeah.
And we've all, experienced and witnessed what's happening, with traffic at the airports and on planes, et cetera. So there's a lot of folks spending money on experiential type things, whether it's travel or going out to eat and doing the things that they like to do in the summer and then to many extent haven't been able to do for the last couple of years.
Well, do you feel like, Tom, your members are feeling a little like they're a little cautious looking at the second half of the year and maybe into 2024? Because I agree, Tim and I have spent more time in the airport than we have in the last couple of years in a big way.
Maybe they can convert some of the space, empty retail space around to bigger airports, because we are seriously bursting at the seams here.
Yeah, exactly. And so I wonder what your members are saying, that people would rather travel right now than maybe go buy some more clothes or stuff for the home.
Well, I think generally speaking, when people, in a normal environment, pre-COVID, pre-inflation concerns, et cetera, that, when you had a high level of travel and experiential type of spend, that generally was good for retail. I mean, when people are out and they're spending and they're vacationing, they're going to buy a lot of stuff, and that's generally good for retail. And of course, a lot of retail centers are places where people go, and spend those experiential dollars. So I think generally speaking, that type of spend is not negative for retail. I mean, obviously there's ebbs and flows as it relates to the time of the year and so forth. I think the level of concern, I think as it relates to the industry and the broader consumer is just the thing that we all have a level of concern around, which is inflation. And, if this continues at the current rate, that is, history is going to be our guide, and that's always been a negative over the long run for consumer spending and obviously for the economy. If we're able to get inflation under control and the Fed's able to navigate a soft landing, that will, I think, and right now the consumer continues to be resilient and strong.
Hey, Tom, one thing I want to ask you, because there's a fair amount of stores just around Bloomberg headquarters in New York City that are still vacant.
There used to be more, I was going to say.
Yeah, Banana Republic, the Container Store. There's a lot of them that are gone. Talk to us about delinquency rates that play into the retail sector, CMBS loans, I'm thinking specifically. Are we seeing any kind of fallout?
Actually, that's improved dramatically. And you're really at, very strong levels today. The level of delinquency has dropped. It's in the CMBS loan market. I think it's under 7% today. You know, in June of 2020, that number was, you know, approaching 20%. So that market has strengthened considerably, and quite frankly, rent collections as an industry are in the, you know, low 90%. I think 92% is the last number I saw as of a few days ago. So generally speaking, the industry is in very strong footing because consumers are spending and they're going out to shop at stores and they're going out to shop online. I mean, consumer spending has been strong. Now, you mentioned New York, and obviously New York is a particularly, you know, it's a unique market, and it is, you know, significantly impacted by what's happening in the broader, work environment and quite frankly, the stresses around people coming back into the coming back into the office. So it's that, particularly Midtown, that's a big driver of retail spend. So New York is unique relative to the rest of the country.
Hey, Tom, 30 seconds left. Weigh in on the power of Amazon Prime Day away from Amazon and how it has turned into a shopping day outside of Amazon, too, for your clients, your members.
Just really quickly.
Yeah, it's become an iconic shopping day. And so, you know, Target Deal Days and a whole host of other, you know, retailers are having similar type of events. And so it's become, you know, another iconic shopping day, just like Black Friday and other days in other parts of the year.
It's more than one day, right? It's like a couple days or something?
Yeah. It's now an event, Carol.
It's an event. I have been bombarded by offers.
What are you going to buy?
Things I must have.
What must you have?
Look away. That's what I'm doing. I got enough stuff in my life right now. Tom McGee, always a pleasure. President and CEO of ICSC on the phone from LA.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Let's talk about getting out of the house, getting out of the apartment.
I'm up for that. Crowne Plaza Hotels and Resorts, part of the publicly held and global hotel and hospitality brand IHG. We're talking about Intercontinental Hotels Group alone. Crowne has about 400 open hotels globally in major cities, gateway cities, and also resort locations. They've got another 100 in the pipeline, Tim.
We got Ginger Taggart, Vice President of Brand Management for Global Crowne Plaza Hotel and Resorts, joining us on the phone from Atlanta. Ginger, how are you?
I'm wonderful. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
It's great to have you with us. Hey, I want to talk about the white paper that you guys just released, talking about blended travel and what that is. But first, I want to get an idea of what you're seeing real time right now across the different properties in terms of demand when it comes to consumers, and then also on the supply side in terms of how easy or how tough it is to get employees right now. So let's start with consumers. What's the outlook?
Yeah, absolutely. As we've talked through, there is probably a historic level of pent-up travel demand, both from a leisure that we've been seeing really fastly growing right across countries and across locations, but also on business transient, even business groups starting to really see that come back. There is a desire to get out and connect as never before. And actually across the business landscape, what we've seen coming out of the pandemic, which has been talked about extensively, is the new way of work, right? The new, more flexible, even more remote work. And this is making deep, deep implications across our industry and quite frankly, across all business industries, which is why Crowne Plaza decided to really launch the first ever white paper and thought leadership approach on blended travel. What are the implications for business across sectors? And then how can all of us in hospitality really jump on these trends and look to develop against the needs of increased travelers? And to your point, alongside the pent-up travel demand, we are seeing growth and acceleration of the work for Crowne Plaza with 107 hotels in the pipeline accelerating around these blended travel trends. We're heavily renovating our entire estate, 50% globally, more than 70% across the U.S. So both on the supply side and the demand, we're really leaning into the needs of travelers.
Ginger, a few months ago or earlier this year, I was talking with the president over at Marriott and also brought up this whole idea of blended travel. Just cut to the chase in terms of what it really means. Does that mean, you know, I travel and I bring my family, or Tim travels and she brings his family? Like, what does that exactly mean?
Great question. So it's really twofold. It historically had always been referred to a bit as bleisure, so business and adding leisure. What we're also seeing with the growth of remote travel, actually people traveling for leisure and extending that time, whether it's across the weekends, right? Whether it's Thursday is the new Friday and Monday is the new Sunday, really both ends of how to create that work-life blend. And within our white paper, we discovered four key trends that are really driving this force of the new facet of blended travel. Reworking work, so people working from all different locations, right? In addition to warm, sunny resort locations to actually increasingly city and urban locations, people enabling that flexibility for remote work, both from going on a business trip and adding on leisure stays, and then actually planning a leisure or a long weekend and deciding to work remotely for a couple of days.
I wonder.
Ginger.
I like that idea.
Like we can go somewhere, yeah. Tim, and then just say, "Hey, we're going to stay in California. Can we just work from
the
hotel?"
Yeah, I'll let you ask our bosses about that. Okay, you can be the one, Carol. Yeah, but you know, it brings me to a good point, though, Ginger. I'm wondering about appetite from employers for this different kind of work style. I was going to say lifestyle, but different kind of work style. Because we had a really interesting chat earlier today with Julia Pollack over at ZipRecruiter, who says that, you know, employers aren't doing gymnastics anymore to get people to sign on that line. So I wonder, you know, if we start to see employers more in control, just in the last 30 seconds that we have with you.
Yeah, absolutely. In addition to the white paper, we looked at and commissioned additional research in that. And we all know that it's still a war on talent out there, right, to drive the best out of business. And we're seeing from our research that consumers, for example, in the U.S., having that flexibility and being able to have that work-life blend is just as important in some cases as having a higher salary. 53% of employees would have a prioritized flexibility, while 56% would be a higher salary. So as businesses look across sectors, it's so important to retain and attract the best talent and drive the best results to have this flexibility. And we're seeing that blended travel is a key portion of this.
Well, great conversation. Look forward to checking with you again down the road. Ginger Taggart, VP of Brand Management over at Global Crown Plaza Hotels and Resorts.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes. 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
TikTok, everybody, just about 11 minutes left in today's trading session. We've been bouncing around. We're just off our lows of the session. The biggest hit to the NASDAQ, down about 2.25%, as you just heard from Charlie. So let's get to it with Alan Zafran.
Yeah, we love it when Alan joins us. He's founding partner and co-CEO at IEQ Capital. He joins us this afternoon from Foster City, California. Alan, how are you?
Hey, doing great, Tim and Carol. How are the two of you today?
We're good. I don't know if
we're getting there.
We're getting there. We're, you know, getting over COVID as yes. one does in 2022. But all is good here. No complaints, Alan. Hey, here we are on the cusp of earnings season, jumping off tomorrow. We got Pepsi and we got Delta Airlines coming up too. What do investors need to be focused on? Because we've been getting the economic data from the Fed we've been getting the commentary from the Fed. We've been getting economic data from various different points. And now we start to hear from the companies. What should we keep an eye on?
Got to keep an eye on whether companies believe that they can maintain their margins in a more inflationary environment. So which companies have the pricing fortitude to raise prices and not lose customers, And that is a challenge that we're going to see in the next several weeks, whether it can hold up. That is the conundrum right now causing all the volatility in the market. It's the market's prices are determined by two things, the multiple you pay and the actual earnings. And what has been really odd thus far this year, despite prices being down, earnings estimates have been going up. And so analysts, for the moment, believe those earnings are going to remain in place. And if you believe that to be true, this market is cheap. It should be bought here. The question is, will guidance from the companies continue to illustrate 10% year-over-year growth in earnings for the S&P 500 this year and next year? That's what analysts are currently forecasting, but the market is very skeptical of that, and prices are down, anticipating profit forecasts to drop. That's what we have to watch for.
Yeah, right. This is going to be so key going forward. Alan, what do you make of some of the market rotation that we're seeing? I'm looking so far in July, your outperformers, we're looking at things like consumer discretionary, healthcare, information technology. We've seen, if you look at the S&P 500, the gains so far in July kind of underscore some of that sector rotation, tech and healthcare gaining ground at the expense of commodity industries. Energy at the bottom of the pack, so far down about 2% here in this month of July. What does some of that potentially tell you?
I take that rotation and I further it by watching the price of copper dropping 30%, mm-hmm. the price of a 10-year treasury, the yield on a 10-year treasury dropping from almost 3.5 to 3, watching energy stocks plummeting, and it's telling me the market is now building in significant economic declines in growth, if not outright recession. And so the rotation makes sense, because in a slow-growing or recessionary environment, growth stocks, those stocks that can grow regardless of the economic environment, are more likely to outperform. So the rotation, which we've seen now for about 6 weeks, is growth stocks are back in vogue. You wouldn't know that based on today's action in big cap tech stocks. And you wouldn't know that because they're going, growth stocks are falling as well. They're just not falling as much as value stocks, but it actually makes sense to me. We are looking forward at a slower growing economy, given what's happening with the Fed, given what's happened with a more heightened inflationary environment. And so it is a setup for growth stocks to outperform value stocks looking forward for quite some time.
So that's a sentiment trade, not an actuality trade.
No, it's actually, I think it's an actuality trade.
Okay.
Before COVID, we were in this really slow growth economy. After COVID, and after this Fed-induced slowdown or recession, we'll be back probably into a slow growth economy, which there's all these longer-term secular trends, aging populations in the U.S. and Europe and Japan, the rise of technological advances that are pushing out people's employment in different ways. There are these secular trends that lead to a slower, longer-term growth rate economically. And in those kinds of environments, businesses that are not requiring strong economic growth, which are growth stocks, those are the stocks that will outperform. So I think in the intermediate to long term, and you're seeing it even now, people are rotating back into growth stocks.
So
that is likely to be a persistent trend.
So it sounds like we go to that slow growth economy that we had pre-pandemic. Is that what you're saying? Forgive me, Tim, my name.
I do, with the big caveat.
Okay.
And the big caveat is the Fed's going to have to raise rates here from what's currently the Fed funds rate at 1.75%, probably up to 3.5%. And they're going to have to do some demand destruction economically to slay inflation. And unfortunately, you're not likely to see the Fed cut rates anytime quickly, nor are you likely to see a lot of fiscal stimulus from the federal government. So the recovery out of the slowdown is going to take longer than one might hope. This is going to be more of a U-shaped drop and recovery than a V-shaped drop and recovery. Mm-hmm. So we have to be patient. That's one of the differences here. You don't have the external stimulus. What's going to make the Fed blink is finally when you see unemployment claims rise dramatically. It turns out unemployment going up is sort of the last stage in the, it gets you to the bottom of the recession when finally there's so much demand destruction that the Fed has to work on full employment and they cut rates again. That's when they blink. It's either that, or it's you actually see somehow miraculously inflation is slayed without the unemployment claims jumping up, but that's not a high probability. So it's going to take time to get to that point. That's probably not until the first half of next year.
Alan, I'm visualizing this U-shaped recovery here, and I'm wondering, mm-hmm. when you say recovery, what what we're recovering from. Are you talking about a U-shaped recovery for the S&P 500? Are you talking about what is that?
Well, okay, so let's talk. Let's take a step back. Let me give you three scenarios. Remember that the stock market goes up on earnings and multiples. So if you look, the last 25 years, the stock market has traded at 16.5 times its forward earnings on average. And frankly, probably should be a higher multiple today than it was 25 years ago. But if you give me that multiple, and if you believe current S&P earnings forecasts of $250 a share, we should be trading at 4,150 on the S&P right now, not 3,850. We could be up 8 to 10% by the end of the year. But most people don't believe that earnings estimate. So if you give me a scenario that growth slows, but we avoid a recession, historically, in a slowdown with no recession, earnings estimates cut by about 5%. And so if you take that down, you get the S&P should trade about 3,900, 16.5 times $238 a share. We're basically where we should be. The question is, if you really go into recession, historically earnings drop 14%. That gets you down to $200 per share. If you put a 16.5 multiple on that, that's 3,300. And God forbid we trade at a 13 to 15 times multiple, which can happen in a recession. You could go as far down as 2,600. I don't think we get anywhere near there.
Right.
But you could tell me we get a recession. And by the way, it's a modest recession because going into this, individuals and corporations actually are very strong. Balance sheets. It's the governments that are over indebted this time. So it's probably a more shallow recession, but you could trade into the 3,300, 3,500 area, which from here is still down about another 10%, but it's going to be slow and plodding.
Well, this gets to depth versus duration, right? So it might be shallow, but it might stick around and linger longer, and kind of like how COVID is, like the after effect. But what's interesting, that whole idea of the Fed blinking, they're going to be. It's not unusual to start thinking about when the Fed cuts rate, but you do get a feeling that they're going to hold off to make sure that they've really got inflation under control. Ellen, great things to think about as we get and we kick off this really important week when it comes to earnings and some economic data points. We've got to run. Ellen Zafran, thank you as always, founding partner and co-CEO at IEQ Capital, on the phone from Foster City, California.
Thanks for listening to Bloomberg Business Week. Download the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Bloomberg.com.
And you can also listen to our radio show at 2 p.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio or watch us on YouTube. Search Bloomberg Global News.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Success. It's discipline. It's teamwork. It's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. And it's why Stifel is one of the fastest growing global wealth management and investment banking firms in the industry. Stifel. It's where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.